Go ahead. So today is a break from our expositional study, verse by verse, through the Gospel of Mark. And because in some countries this is still Christmas, and because Christmas Day even in our country was yesterday, I wanted to do this study, a topical study, different for me. It's not like I can take you to a passage where we can follow along verse by verse. I've got a whole bunch of verses for us to look at. And what I would like for you to do is to keep this outline with you and to read these things on your own. Read the verses on your own so you know this is not the opinion of some anti-establishment ex-hippie thinks he's a pastor, so that you know that these are the words from Scripture. And the reason why I believe that's important is that I didn't hear some of these things until I was in my 40s, and I was raised in a church. I had a very different idea about who God is, and it came from church. In fact, a lot of it didn't even really come from the Bible. And I am learning as I go that I barely know him. And I'm learning the more I study, the more I study Hebrew, the more that I study Greek, the more that I study the original language, and the more I study with the intent to know him. Sometimes I stumble on just astonishing things. It makes me angry in some cases that I spent all those years in church and no one ever told me these things. So when the Lord asked me to do this study today, I thought, okay, I do not want to have to look Jesus in the eyes someday and realize I had an opportunity to talk to people that he dearly loves, and I didn't tell them this stuff. So I relish this opportunity. I know that some people listening to this, and we have, you know, 10 times this many people that listen online, in other countries even. Some of these things you may not have heard before either, just like I didn't. So check me out. Read the scriptures. I'm not going to read all of them. I'm going to read a few of them. So this is more of a topical study, and it's all based on, fits very well at Christmas, but it's all based on what I think. If I had a vote, I would vote one of the two or three most important verses in the entire New Testament for believers, 2 Peter 1:3, which says, God has given us everything we need for life and for godliness through our knowledge of him. And the word for knowledge is the Greek word epinosis, which means knowledge by intimacy. It's a relational word. It's not a brain word completely. It's a brain and heart word. Everything we need, God has given us through our intimate knowledge of him. And he's called us to his own glory and goodness. Most, at least of my upbringing, till I came to Calvary Chapel back in around 1969 or 70, most of my upbringing was like most of the people that I knew, where almost all sermons were based on what you ought to be doing for God. Those of you that were raised Baptist probably heard a zillion times the phrase, saved to serve. Saved to serve. Jesus saved us so we would serve him. That's not exactly true. He saved us because we were lost, and he loved us. And what he bought was not a whole bunch of servants. He bought a bride. So we're going to look at, from Jesus' own mouth, the reason why he was given. One of the things I love about 2 Peter 1:3 is it says that God has given us everything we need. So in this package that looks exactly like a little Jewish baby in a stable, what God gave us there. I am absolutely, I'm trying to think of a superlative I can use. Astonished is not maybe a strong enough word at how many church people I run into that don't know these things. I'm constantly running into church people that every time they hear a message about God's love, it's always followed by, okay, now you owe God. Now, this is what you owe God. And, of course, it's a great motivational tool if you want to get people to go to the mission field or volunteer for nursery or give more money or something else. But do you know, maybe you don't, I didn't, that the Bible spends more time, more space, spatially speaking, the Bible spends most of its time on talking about what God has done for us, a proportionately smaller amount of time on what we should do for him. You'd never know that, would you? Because in most churches, it's exactly the opposite of that. It's all about what you should be doing, how you should be serving. So what I wanted to do today, this is by special request from the Lord. I have to tell you, just as I was going through my notes, Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, I was blessed all over again, realizing this is what I have. How did I not know this? Why had nobody told me some of these things? Well, now I'm telling you, I'm passing it on and I'm being reminded. The fact that God has given to us, there's so many. You'll start finding when you read anything that talks about Jesus, Old Testament and New Testament, you'll find the word given over and over and over. The most common verb that Jesus used describing himself was the word sent, S-E-N-T. That's also speaks of a gift, doesn't it? So I call this the perfect gift. Picture this. You thought you were just getting the whole away in the manger thing. You thought you were just getting the little baby, and you're sitting there looking at your gift. But here we are the day after Christmas, and now you get to open up, start opening up all the gifts that came with this little baby who didn't stay a little baby. One of my favorite new verbs, I'm a word guy. I love verb tenses. I you know, English is such a weeny language compared to Greek. The Greek vocabulary is five times the size of the English vocabulary, Hebrew as well. But one of my favorite new words, I wrote it down on your little list here. It was, I found it looking through the Christmas story as Luke records it, that what Jimmy read last Friday night at our Christmas Eve service. The angel said to Mary, he addressed her as you who are highly favored. And the Greek verb is the word karatō, which means, and I think I wrote it down for you, it means lavished with grace, made lovely, and made lovable. You understand the difference between those two. Made lovely and made lovable. Made acceptable. It's only used twice in the entire New Testament. I love that. Whenever I find one of those words that's rare, if I find an exciting word, I just look up and try to find every place that it is. It's only used in one other place. It's used in Ephesians. Strangely, it fits right into our study because in Ephesians chapter 1, it's used to describe what we believers have been given in Jesus. Same verb. We have been lavished with grace, which means undeserved, unearned favor. We have been made lovely. We have been made lovable. We have been made acceptable, all in what we have been given when we were given Jesus. So we're given everything we need to live a life. And of course, that's coming from the point of view of our Creator who designed us. And everything we need to be godly. And it doesn't come through church. It doesn't come through scholarship. It comes through a person. It comes through intimate knowledge of a person. And church has the opportunity of helping us know that person or distracting from that person and just doing church. And scholarship gives us the opportunity to study him and to know him better. Everything we need's been given to us. John 3:16, which you're probably familiar with, even if you weren't a believer, you've seen it at basketball games and on big placards right behind the free throw, the shot from the free throw line, which says, God so loved the world that he gave. There's the gift thing again. He gave his only son, unique, one-of-a-kind son, that whoever trusts and clings to, relies upon him, wouldn't perish but have everlasting life. 1 John 3:16, I really like to, in the epistles of John, says that this is how we know what love is. We look at Jesus, who laid his life down for us. And when we studied 1 John, which I believe is up on our website, when we studied 1 John, we talked about that phrase, Jesus laid his life down for us, and that was the demonstration of what love is. That wasn't talking about his death on the cross. It was talking about the whole way he lived his life. The minute he popped out of the birth canal of that teenage Jewish girl, the minute he breathed air of the atmosphere of this earth, which the Bible says in the Gospel of John, he created. He holds the subatomic particles together. It's his power by which all things cohere. The minute that that word made flesh, baby body, breathed in earth air, everything that he did in living his life was for us a demonstration of love. And I love all the scriptures where it talks about from Jesus' perspective why he was sent. Interesting to me, I don't know if you've ever pondered this, but he could have just shown up, you know, a couple of days before Passover, said, hi, everybody, I'm this pure, spotless Son of God. I'm here to die for the sins of the whole world. Died on the cross and then shot back to heaven. Why did he have to spend 33 years living in a blue-collar family, most of which was preparation for a short three-year ministry? Living out a life and under what would not be called stellar circumstances at all. Ordinary circumstances. Well, a few of the scriptures we're going to read today tell us why he lived that kind of a life. That was so we would know that he understood. It was for us as well. So, the most popular verb that Jesus used when he talked about his mission is he says that he was sent. And I wrote down 11 things, and of course, you know, this is like sort of like getting a new computer. The minute you read through the instructions, it's already obsolete. And, you know, already there's a newer version that can do more faster. I did these 11 things and wrote them down and pondered them, and then I thought of 10 more things. So this is by no means an exhaustive list. But I know somebody listening to these words today is going to hear something that they didn't know they have been given in Jesus. They thought it was just tissue paper wadded up in the bottom of the box, and they didn't realize that, no, there's a gift in that wadded tissue paper, and you open it up and you find that it's diamonds and jewels and fabulous wealth. And that's my prayer that that would happen today. So first thing on our list that says that Jesus said that he was sent. Remember, the angel's message to Joseph and Mary was that his name would be Jesus. Yeshua is the Hebrew name, which means God is our salvation or God is our rescuer. But it says his nickname would be Emmanuel, Jesus is his name, but the thing people are going to call him is Emmanuel, which means God is with us. So when Jesus shows up for his public ministry, he says a couple of things. He says, I'm from day one have been meant to send a message that God is with you. He made some astonishing claims. He made some astonishing claims that if they're not true, he's a lunatic or he's a deliberate deceiver. C.S. Lewis said that sort of paints us into a corner. We've got three positions. He either told the truth or he's a liar or he thinks he's a poached egg or, you know, he's nuts. We'll look at some of those claims today. But from his perspective, he says that he was sent to do a bunch of things. First thing on the list is he was sent to, he said, all the Gospels say it, but Luke 19 is the one that I partially quoted. He said he was sent to seek and to save. That word means rescue. To seek out and rescue the lost. I can't tell you how old I was. I'm going to say maybe in my mid-50s. Before the implication of that statement. I've heard it so many times. I heard so many messages on it. But the implication of it didn't hit me until maybe 10 years ago. And that was that if he was sent to seek the lost and rescue them, that means he's not waiting for me to find him. That is one of the very unique aspects about real Christianity. Not bureaucratic Christianity, not organized religion Christianity, but the real Christianity of the Bible isn't about us reaching up to God. Isn't it about us being good enough and us somehow achieving a certain kind of consciousness that where now we're acceptable in God's sight? It's exactly the opposite of that. It's God coming to us, estranged, lost, clueless people, smart, clueless people, and ignorant, clueless people. Really lost people or just sort of lost people. But people who are unable to reach up to him or climb up to him, and he came to us. It tells me a lot about God's heart. In fact, all of these things tell me so much about God's heart. That if he sought me out, like that song we sang, that's why we sang it. How great is your love? It reaches to the heavens. How great is the heart that sought and rescued me? What if he didn't? Where would you be? I know where I would be. I would be dead. I would have taken that bottle of pills 26 years ago that I was going to take, had sitting on my nightstand to take my life. I didn't see that there was a reason to live another day. I would have jumped off a bridge. Lord knows how many times I would have killed myself in an automobile or a motorcycle. Where would I be, though, if he hadn't sought and rescued me? Part of what he rescued me personally from was religion. I cannot think of a more futile, frustrating place to be trapped than in religion. Because you spend your life for something that you can never achieve. I was listening to Michael McDonald's recording, Mark, that you gave me. I thank you so much for that, of that testimony song that he wrote about being so lost and so far away. And the only place in his life that he found peace was in Jesus, of all places. Of course, he had to walk a pretty long mistake-filled road to realize that, well, why not try this option because nothing else has done what's promised. And, of course, then he found what we've found, that Jesus is the only place of peace. But see, it was Jesus seeking him. The fact that he heard the message and that he knew where to go. Jesus has been, haven't you found that true? If you look back and you realize, you know, he was the one that came and found you. I can't tell you how grateful I am that he got me away from church and invited me to himself. it did take some tremendous disillusionment, but that was okay. It was worth it because I realized I wasn't going to find what it was that I wanted in church. And I'm so grateful that he intervened. So one of the things that you've been given is somebody that didn't wait for you to make the first move. In fact, I would probably venture to say that every day he doesn't wait for you to make the first move. He's sitting on your bed. He's there. He's committed. He's there waiting for you to give him some attention. But his attention is focused on you. That's why when the Bible says in James, which we're studying on Wednesday nights, it says, draw near to the Lord, he draws near to you. Well, in fact, he's nearer than your next breath. And the fact that he invites us means that he's come to seek and to save the lost ones. And of course, that is our testimony if we are believers. Second thing, he was sent, he said, to give his life as a ransom. This is one of my former favorite Greek words. It actually sounds more Italian than it does Greek. The word is exogorazo. In fact, doesn't it sound, if I just whistle or wiggle my hand, doesn't it sound like it should have Parmesan on it and maybe some eggplant in it and a little bit of oregano? Exogorazo. I'll have a large helping of exogorazo, please. But it's a fatter word than you might think. It's the word that's translated ransom. Jesus said, I came to give my life as a exogorazo, a ransom. What it means, the verb means to buy a slave in order to set him free. I will never forget the day that I looked that word up and I found what this was. So this was transforming to my mind. I always knew, ever since I first heard the message in church, that Jesus bought me. But I thought he bought me so I would be his slave. A lot of people think that. Save to serve, save to serve, save to serve. So volunteer, baby, you know, get on a committee, teach a Sunday school class, get out there and, you know, work for Jesus. But see, we weren't saved from our slavery to self and to sin and to religion. We weren't saved to become his slaves. That's the word exogorazo that Jesus used, means we were saved to be set free. That changes everything, doesn't it? You know what? You couldn't pay me enough to do what I will willingly do, joyfully do, out of love for him. There's not enough money in the world that could buy that kind of loyalty from me. I'll willingly do it. And I don't feel an obligation in the sense of, okay, I'm Jesus's slave, so now I have to measure up. No, he bought me to set me free from any form of slavery, including religious slavery. It's interesting that all of the writers of the New Testament, every single one of them, used the word to describe themselves. They used the word doulos, which is the Greek word for a bond slave. It's a free person who signs their lives voluntarily over to become the property of somebody else. So it's interesting. All of those guys didn't have to do what they did. It's a voluntary act.